The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io, the ERP built to streamline complex e-commerce operations. There's a lot going on in today's modern e-commerce business. Perhaps you're tracking inventory across 3PLs, Amazon, and your own warehouses. Maybe you're selling on 8 different platforms. Maybe you're bringing in raw products, manufacturing them, and you need to track them all the way through beginning to finished goods. And maybe you're selling to big box stores wholesale and need something that can handle EDI. Maybe all the above. Well, Fulfill thrives at streamlining and automating all this complexity, including the scenarios I mentioned above and many more, to streamline your business and save you time and money. And their 100% open API unlocks truly unlimited potential in terms of custom automations. So if your duct tape solution of a few SaaS apps, VAs, and Zapier's apps is beginning to break down, you need to check out Fulfill. You can learn more about them and how to streamline your business today at ecommercefuel.com/Fulfill. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One-Click Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big-spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of One-Click Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff. For their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells, you can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today, joining me on the show is Marc Poirier. He is the owner and CEO of Rogue.care and roguecare.ca, where they sell red light therapy products. And he's a newish member to E-Commerce Fuel, and he got on my radar. If you're in the forum, maybe you've heard this, but all of our new members, we ask that they write a new member case study, something that they can come in and share with the community, because one of our moderation values is reciprocity and giving back. And so that's one of the ways that we ask our new members to dive in. And Marc shared a phenomenal case study on how his business started with PPC. He's got a long, as we'll find here, a long legacy and a lot of track record on the paid front, but realized competition, especially in the US, was getting harder and harder, and started shifting some of that investment and focus and energy into SEO. And I think it didn't spend an insane amount. I think all in, they probably spent about 25 or 30K on content, but was able to leverage that. And they're probably getting close to 25 or 30K per month now in free traffic after just a couple of years. So wanted to dive into all this stuff. We're going to be talking paid traffic, who he has writing. I'm actually also in the middle of ramping up a content team. So how he's writing these blog posts, who he's hiring to write them, SEO optimization, circa late 2020 or, beginning of 2023, actually, and a bunch of other things, all SEO geek out related. So Marc, thanks for willing to do this. My kind of early days are in SEO, so excited to geek out with someone who's been doing it a little bit more in the weeds recently. So thanks for coming on.
I'm honored to be here.
Yeah. And maybe before, well, we won't focus on this. SEO is going to be kind of where we spend most of our time, but red light therapy products, can you give people a sense, like, what is it that you sell? I always find this helpful when I'm hearing people talk, and especially given the cool different random things people sell. What are red light therapy products?
Red light therapy is exposing your body to specific wavelengths of red light and near infrared light to help the mitochondria in your cells have the energy they need to do what they're supposed to do. So different cells of our body have different functions. Some of them are in the skin, for example, your skin cells. You can see signs of aging in people, of course, wrinkles and so on. So, or scars, even cuts. Using red light therapy helps, for example, accelerate the healing of wounds, or it can help accelerate or diminish the appearance of wrinkles, for example. But there's also applications for sports and treating mild injuries with the near infrared light. So our lights have both components, red for the skin and the hair, and the near infrared, which penetrates through the skin to provide energy to the cells, the mitochondria of the cells that are just beneath the skin surface in your muscles or your joints, for example.
Got it. And so you have this business, and you had a SaaS business that you ran for a number of years, a sizable SaaS business, sold that, and you got into this business. And you were, early on, you were powering it largely with paid traffic. And what was it, I kind of alluded to at the top, but what was it that made you decide to go and start investing much more heavily in SEO? Was it PPC just in the US? Because you sell the US, America, US, Canada, and Australia. Were you seeing paid traffic across the board become much harder? And if so, when was that? And where were you seeing it the most acutely?
Yeah, I think paid traffic is just harder, period, across the board. But in the US more specifically, just because it is a larger market and is more competitive. And so the cost to acquire the clicks, which then, you know, hopefully turn into sales, became increasingly too high. So if your cost of acquisition doesn't line up with your unit economics, there's no business, you know. So it worked fine in the beginning. We had some issues with our payment processor, which lasted maybe a week. This is maybe 6 months in, from say April 2020 to maybe 5 months to September, things were fine, you know. And then we had this issue, and maybe URLs changed. I forget the exact reason, but we had some issues with Google Ads. And when we decided to rebuild the account, we're never again able to get our CPCs where they used to be, which meant that we no longer had a US business if we're to focus only on paid search as an acquisition channel, which was in the beginning the entire strategy.
And what year was this?
2020.
2020. Okay. Yeah. It's a little, the state of e-commerce trends report that we do at ECF every year. I think the percentage of over the last 5 years, the reliance on paid traffic has gone up 50% in just 5 years. So you're seeing this in 2020. And so you start writing blog posts, and you write pretty meaty ones, you know, 1500 to 3000 words. And I was reading through them beforehand, and they're not filler either. Like, you link to a lot of scientific journals, and obviously you're writing about things in the healthcare/wellness space. So these aren't, you know, you need to have some level of expertise on the product to do these well. So these are all written in house. You have a team of people, a couple of people that are writing in house for you. Can you talk about that team, like how you found them? Because I'm also in the process right now, like I mentioned, of hiring some writers for e-commerce fuel and to kind of distill some of the information in the form into very usable information dense guides. And it's finding great writers is like finding anyone great is a challenge. So talk about your team in-house a little bit and how you found them and what you look for in really good content writers.
Yeah. The first reason that I hired the first of these two people, and in fact, it was the same for the second, was for customer support. When I started the business, it was me alone for a long time, answering people's questions about red light therapy and potential benefits for this or that, you know. And I, you know, you don't want to say, "Oh, yes, it's going to cure something." when someone would ask us, let's say, "Could it help with psoriasis?" So then, what I would do is say, "Okay, here's a query you could do in Google. Just ask Google this exact question, you know, red light therapy or photobiomodulation and psoriasis." And, you know, sort of draw your own conclusions. Of course, I wouldn't say it like that, but I would always come back to that. But before I would say that, I would look myself, like, what are the results for this and that? And I became pretty well educated on, you know, beyond the, you know, my competitors had already done some of the work in terms of summarizing what it might be good for at a high level. People have more specific questions. And I would, every time, venture to find the answer for them and then spit it back out. But the business did grow quite a bit. And somebody who was already selling red light therapy products on eBay reached out to me. She had she would import them from a Chinese manufacturer off the shelf and just sell them on eBay. But there was no more business for her doing that because the Chinese manufacturers were competing directly with her on eBay. So she asked, you know, could I work for you? And in the beginning, I was like, well, I don't have any money to pay you, so no, you can't work for me. But, you know, I liked her. We chatted back and forth, and eventually the business did grow, and I did need help. And so I called her, you know, and she was very, very savvy about what research is out there, about different things, how to use the red lights, what are the things you need to look out for. And so I hired her for customer support. And she's well-spoken, educated, and so on. You know, so that was it. And she was, you know, helping me answer tickets. And then, of course, Black Friday comes and, you know, sales explode probably. It was our first Black Friday. So I know as they do on Black Friday. But at the time, you know, I was really glad she was there. And we went through it and ended up with a lot more content. And that was, you know, when I started realizing that my PPC strategy was not working for the US market anymore. And we decided to turn it off, basically, not try to bid like, you know, $1 per click when the real cost is $18 per click. So like, just, there's no point. You know, we don't want to harvest the bottom of the barrel. So we're going to stop and we're going to start writing content. We're going to make it a discipline and I'll reinvest the money that I'm putting in, or some of the money, not even all of it, of course, but what I had in the US PPC campaign, to reallocate that money to write some content and just start our blog and commit.
Mark, let me interrupt you just for a second if that's all right. So you found the person, originally brought them in for customer service because of their expertise. And I'm guessing, so eventually they started being right, helping you write this content. So really it was expertise that you looked at first and foremost. Were they a great writer? Like, was he or she a great writer? That's one of the, I mean, expertise is huge, but also if you can't, you know, some people are great writers, a lot of people aren't great writers. So how did you just get lucky and find people that were also great writers? Or did you focus on the expertise of the product in the field and then kind of just did the best you could with the writing quality?
So I would say she's a very good writer, but she's not a writer. She's not a copywriter. You know, that's not her career path. But what we did in the beginning, you know, it wasn't me or her writing the articles. We hired a copywriter to take the content we'd built for our knowledge base and expand upon it and create really good quality content. And so in the beginning, this is how we did it. We had a freelancer and we would pay her $300 to $400, I want to say, per article, which were very large, well-researched pillar articles that would explore like a specific topic, but at a pretty high level. So she wrote that we'd identified, and I'm going off memory here, but maybe 4 or 5 key pillars, subjects that we wanted to touch upon. And so she wrote those huge posts and a few smaller posts that we would link off of those pillar posts, smaller ones. But then, you know, I think we had enough material and I felt like we needed more momentum and we had some time because now let's say it's, I don't know, February or something, the holidays are gone and we do have a little bit more bandwidth. And I forget if she offered or if I asked, but, you know, she started writing to help along and on capacity. And she did great. You know, she just saw the kind of content that the other writer was putting out. And she sort of mimicked, you know, like the style and the, and she, you know, I wouldn't say she's as good, but close enough, you know, definitely good writer. And so, you know, now she's become the managing director for the company. So she's less available. But she still writes a little bit. But we hired someone to sort of replace her in customer support who was a client. So again, it was knowledge. You know, this is a client that was very savvy. She was a physical therapist and she knew a lot of the benefits of red light therapy. She was a client. She bought a few devices from us and she was looking for work, you know, so we hired her part-time at first and now she's a full-time employee. But so again, it's the support person that's writing, or both of them actually are writing almost all of our content.
Got it. Okay. So the big thing is you're looking for someone who's got deep expertise, experience in it. Do you have an editor that manages all of this, like an editorial calendar who goes through and, you know, cleans stuff up, publishes it, or does each individual writer on your team do their own editing or do you do that? How do you deal with kind of the last push to get it live?
So there's a process to get it live. It's not a hard process. It's a documented process. So whoever writes the article will send it to the other person. So if it's, let's say Margaret writes it, she sends it to Diana for review, like a first sort of review. And then it all comes through me at the end. I review quickly. Usually I have nothing to say and I just publish it. So we don't have an editor, you know, we should, you know, I think maybe this is something we might do this year. to have someone part-time or as a freelancer to sort of help with that. But today it's all in-house still, and it's just peer review.
Got it. Okay. And I'd love to kind of get into some the SEO, more of the technical side of SEO. And SEO is, I cut my teeth originally with my first, man, all three businesses I've built have been all on the back of SEO completely. Although, like I kind of mentioned at the top, the last 3 or 4 years have been great on the podcast front, and some other fronts have really neglected the published content side. And so when I think about SEO, I think you have a much more up-to-date kind of understanding of how to optimize things given the current kind of Google framework. So is this, let me know how much of this is still relevant and how much is not what you do. So if you're going to write an article, maybe you go through, get a bunch of keywords using a tool like Ahrefs, or maybe finding questions people are putting into Google, and you get a whole library of potential topics. You find a keyword that is most searched for that is very relevant to that topic, maybe some related keywords as well and modifiers. Then you take that master keyword, put it in a title, put it in the URL, put that in the headings, make sure everything's, you know, focused on that kind of topic throughout, you know, and write really high quality, great content, put some pictures in there, do some outlinking, do some internal linking on the site, and then hit publish and keep that up for 6, 12, 18 months until you watch the traffic start to build, because it's obviously a long-term investment. How much of that, and that's a little antiquated. Yeah. So how much of that is what you are doing, and how much of that is actually accurate for kind of your process?
These are afterthoughts, mostly. Not all of it, but it's not an afterthought to pick the correct topics, like what is it that we're going to write about, and to have the right titles for your articles, for like not only from a keyword optimization standpoint, but you know, let's say you do rank, if the title and or description don't jive with what people are looking for, it doesn't matter that you're ranking. You're not going to attract the right traffic. So we spend a lot of time or some time thinking about what the title should be, and maybe not enough time. But I think that's an important component. Is that what is that title? And yes, making sure that, of course, your keyword is in there matters. Writing a good article that people can engage with, I think, is key. I've always thought that. I've been like you, doing this since the early 2000s, and I've tried a long time ago other strategies that were more push button marketing. You know, just created automated content, and it would work for a few weeks or a month or two, and then Google catches up with you, and you got to start all over again. So I've come to the conclusion a long time ago that writing actually really good content that serves the purpose of the user is the way to go. So we don't spend a lot of time optimizing the article for keyword density or anything like that. You know, we don't really care. Maybe we should. You know, like I'm not an SEO expert. I use it for my means, and it works very well. But we just pick the right topics. We create a bit of an editorial calendar at a high level. What are the key things we're going to write about? And in the research we do, it's not just how many people look for something, but it's also what's the sort of alignment with what we do in terms of what our audience is looking for and the commercial value as well. You know, so we can. For example, it may not be a great idea to write a lot of content about why you should not do red light therapy or contraindications. Maybe you write that content, but or really high level people who are just, what is it? You know, fine, you write one or two articles, but you may not want to create thousands of super high up the funnel articles. It costs a lot of money. It takes a lot of time, and people are just not ready yet. So while you do want that content, I think we make a lot of our investment in content in things that are a little bit more middle funnel to bottom of funnel. So the middle funnel would be people looking for red light therapy and eczema, for example. If someone looks for that, they're probably heard that it may help for their skin, and they're curious about if it can help with their specific skin condition. So these are the kinds of articles that we write. And yes, they, we don't spend a lot of time optimizing them, and we don't review them. I know that's a big thing now, is to review your articles periodically, maybe every 12 months or something like that, to come back to stuff you've already written, make little changes and change the title possibly for something more up to date. You know, not something we do, but I know it is a best practice for bloggers. But we're a little bit lighter than that on the process.
What about longer versus shorter? So you have, you know, you write big meaty, you know, meatier posts, definitely on the larger side. And it seems like, on one hand, it seemed like there was a, it seems like there's still a compelling case for having an authoritative guide on something that goes really deep. But it also seems like Google is getting much more interested in short, punchy answers that can really, address people's questions quickly and brevity, the answers that get surfaced in the SERPs. And granted, they can pull that out of longer articles, but how do you think about longer posts versus, you know, really punchy, shorter ones that just get to the point very quickly?
Yeah, I think of longer posts as there's many ways for it. The hub and wheel model with the hub, what do they call it? Hub and spoke, where you pick, let's say, a wheel. You know, you have the hub in the center and you got the spokes that lead from there. So what's the core topic? And we have maybe four or five core topics for example, recovery or skin or hair or wellness or health as it relates to red light therapy. And these are very long posts because we have little summaries of all of the things, right? So all of the things that are related to wellness or sleep, you know, and then we can say, okay, in this research, and so we can carry on like that and write like a exhaustive post that may be 3,000 or 4,000 words. But it's not very detailed. It just covers everything at a high level. And then we use that to link to the smaller, more specific posts about, for example, tendonitis and red light therapy, for example, which may be, you know, not the same thing as just how do you use red light therapy to go beyond the skin. That may be like a pillar post or like a hub post with a very long one, but there's more specific articles where we're going to refer to like 5 or 6 or 10 published articles. Those are smaller. Those typically come in at maybe 1,000 to 1,500 words tops. And both, then they complete each other, you know. So we link from the hub post into the spoke post. Sorry, I don't have I don't know what terminology people use for that. There's many, but the bigger posts will link to the smaller, more detailed posts and vice versa. And so we do that with like our 4 or 5 key areas. And that's it. And then how do you get inbound links that, you know, that'll usually be with the larger, more detailed posts. This is usually what's going to attract inbound links.
Got it. So if I'm on rogue.care right now, so if we're talking about the hub and spoke model, which I'm familiar with, would love to see in action here and talk through it. If I want to see kind of how this have it all organized, do I click on the learn button here? I would guess probably.
Yep.
And then go to the blog. And then we've got Rogue Canada Red Light Therapy blog. And then you've got all topics. And then you've got, if I hit that, there's probably 2 dozen that come down off of that. So alternative treatments, cleanse, detox, you know, fitness, hair growth, healing, health, joint health, just a drop down. Are those all of the kind of the hubs, couple dozens, those are the hubs. And then off of that, link all of your kind of smaller, more specific, but shorter articles?
They should be, but they're not. These are, you could write a lot about surgery, but there's probably only 2 or 3 articles. Let's say red light therapy for pain, the safe and effective solution for all kinds of aches. So if you, that is a pillar post. So if you go to learn red light therapy blog and you click on, I think, pain management.
Okay, got it.
And you'll see that it's like a thorough post on what are the different kinds of pain, you know, common pain conditions, a brief history of modern pain treatment, the opioid crisis, future of pain management. And then it gives us opportunities to link to content that's out there in the internet or content that's on our website. You know, we talk about how to improve cellular function. You know, we have a link to one of our articles.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. If you're listening to this episode and enjoying it, then I've got to tell you about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands. The secret sauce, as the name implies, is that everyone inside, we vet everyone to make sure they have real-world experience running an e-commerce brand and struggle with the same kind of things that you do if that's the position you're in. And why is that important? Well, it means you get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. So if you have if you've got somebody that HR issue and you're worried about letting someone go, but you're worried about a lawsuit or you're trying to figure out the best ERP to implement, or maybe you're trying to understand marketing techniques, you can post a message to our form and get answers within hours, sometimes minutes, from experts who know this stuff. You get to plug into an amazing network of e-commerce entrepreneurs worldwide across the United States and the globe that you can connect with when you're traveling for meetups and get invites to member-only events like ECF Live. And then finally, you can avoid costly hiring and software mistakes by tapping into our review directory of over 10,000 reviews for agencies and e-commerce software tools. I mean, it's really hard to find unbiased reviews online right now. So often they're either paid for or they're affiliate links. All of our reviews are completely unbiased. So when you go down the road of hiring a new ad agency or looking for that new, you know, ERP software, you have a lot more confidence that you're not going to be wasting the next 3 or 4 months of your life on an expensive project. So if that sounds interesting to you, come join us. You can learn more and apply ecommercefuel.com, and we'd love to have you inside. All right, let's get back to the discussion.
You're not necessarily highlighting these any more prominently on your blog page than other places. You're just being very intentional about saying, okay, this blog post that kind of just lives among all the other blog posts, this is our real beefy one that we're going to be very proactive in linking out to the smaller articles that answer some of these in detail.
Yeah, these earn a lot of links. I think that's they earn because they're good, but also because we solicit links to these specific ones. And like I said, there's probably 4, 5, maybe 6 of these really big, very, very meaty posts. And this is what we reach out to the world with. I don't know, like we can find websites that talk about pain and pain management, and there are a lot of them. And we have our link builders, not me, but we hire a firm that looks for websites that may want to link to this.
Got it. And maybe we could talk a little bit about, well, quickly, before we go to link building, one or two more questions on the content front. I noticed you link, like I mentioned earlier, to a lot of studies, NIH studies, government studies, university studies, et cetera. Is that, obviously, I'm guessing there's a lot of good information there, but is there some sense of a strategy there to try to signal to say, hey, the more we link out to authoritative sources, it's going to kind of reflect positively back on us from Google? Or is that just, it's just totally natural based on where you're getting good on?
It's totally natural. It's not, we're not doing that to try to influence Google. It just makes sense. Like, we did a lot of research to write this, and then these are the sources that we have. And so we link back to the sources because you should. And then, by the way, you know, a rumor is that authority is a big thing for Google. So probably linking to authoritative sources when you're writing a post like this probably helps.
Let's talk about link building a little bit. So you've got these pillar posts and link building, and I feel like link building has gotten to be a really hard strategy, and sometimes it often gets, and not unfairly so, compared to just kind of cold email. And sometimes, you know, some people do link building really poorly and just, you know, with outreach, almost spam-like. I feel like it's got a bad reputation over the last 2 or 3 years, but there are ways you can do it effectively. You also got to be real careful from a penalty standpoint if you're doing anything gray hat or black hat. So how do you approach link building in an effective way? Like, what have you seen work, and how are you building links to your sites with outreach?
There's probably 3 things that we do. The one that attracts the most links today, we outsource link building to a firm that does only that. You know, when you do that, you have to let go of the purity concept, you know, because it's not black hat. There's nothing unethical or wrong with it, but they own, for example, you know, they have deals probably with other link builders, you know, who may have, they may own websites that they bought. There's a lot of that. People buy businesses, you know, you buy a company or you buy the assets of a company that has content. So that's very popular. And then they build a portfolio of actual real websites, you know, where you can have access to links, provided that you're willing to pay for that link. So it's like
a private blog network, right?
Yeah. It's not unlike that. Absolutely. But, you know, I don't know how many times I've had to go back to other agencies, and this one too, even though they are, I would say, better, more aware. But you're constantly having to, because I see the signs of a bad link. You know, when they send me link reports, I look at them. And, you know, I've fired people almost immediately. Just looking at the links that were coming in. I'm like, no. This is not what we are looking for. You know, I thought we were clear. The guys we work with now are, you know, like it's not pure. Like every time we get a link report, I would say, let's say there's 20 new links. I would say on average, 3, 4, 5 are like purely earned. Like because they do reach out, you know, to other blog owners, say, hey, you really should link to this for whatever reason. And it does work, but, you know, it's probably very difficult to build a business like that. Anyway, at my scale, I don't think I could afford to spend $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 per link, you know, to have pure links only coming in. But I can afford to spend a few hundred, you know, $200, $300, $400 for a good link. That's legit, you know, in a website where a human will probably kick on it because he sees the value, you know. So those are the kinds of links I look for, not unlike the links that we have on our own articles that link to, say, the CDC or, you know, if we're complimenting the article, I'm very happy, even if somebody got paid. I do care if it's a blatant thing, but if I'm not opposed to paying some money for some links.
How are you getting the links though? Like, what is the? I guess that's kind of the cornerstone of my question is: are you just reaching out and saying, "Hey, we wrote this post on page management for, you know, Red Therapy. We see that you have a blog treating focusing on Red Therapy or on pain management. Could you consider linking to it?" Because I get a lot of those. We get a lot of those links at ECF, and almost always they just never get responded to. So how do you, like, what's the tactics you guys are using that's actually effective for getting people to link to your stuff? Because that's a hard thing to do in 2023.
Yeah. So again, we're not doing the link building, but I know what they're doing. And they look for websites that link to sort of competing articles that have the same topic, like very much the same topic, but that are weak, which is all of them. And so they reach out to people who link to those articles and say, okay, that article is outdated, it's weak, it's incomplete, and here's a much better one. And that ultimately works. But like I said, you know, maybe in a month we'll get 3 links, maybe 4. So it's not enough. You know, that's where they supplement with other links. But that's the request typically that they do, is to replace a poor article with a really good one.
Got it. Okay. So you have that approach, which maybe gets you 3 or 4 links per month or so. Where are the other links coming from? Obviously, you have the request to people, you have the earned media, people just, you know, or earned links. People see your post, they're reading it, they think it's great, they link to it. You have those two. What other key areas are you able to get links from?
So there's that agency, they do their thing. They'll buy some links. I know that. I don't know which ones, but it's clear to me. And then we have experimented with something. It's like something I used to do a long time ago that has stopped working, which you used to be able to buy expired domains and leverage them for their PR, the page rank. This is a long, long, long time ago. But today you can't do that. But what you can do is, like I mentioned earlier, to buy the assets of a business that's no longer operating. So you're essentially acquiring business assets. It's a business transaction. And as part of that, you know, we do have one website that we bought that is a bit of an authority on a very specific topic that's closely related to what we do. And so we have that, and we have just done nothing at this point. This is exploratory for me, but there's others, you know, that I've looked at. There's other websites that are there that I could acquire for their value. And then, of course, I could exploit them myself to link back to my property. But it's expensive, you know, it's very risky, and it's not, you know, this is $8,000, the property we bought. So it's not like a huge business transaction, but it's kind of a significant investment for something that may or may not work. We don't know yet, but we're letting it sit there. Eventually, you know, we'll certainly use it as either a complement to our content, and you know, then you can sort of cross link between the two websites. So that's something that we're doing. That's maybe high impact, but maybe not. Like I don't really have a conclusion on that. And that's it. You know, like for us, like the link, and we've not done much. We did in the beginning. It's just people are curious about what we do, red light therapy. It's an interesting topic. And so we've been on, sort of featured on several websites who do sort of holiday gift guides or who are interested in alternative medicine. And so they'll interview me, you know, to understand what this is. So these are the more PR, totally legit sources of links that we have as well. We're just people who are just legitimately interested in what we do and cite us as an authority.
Have you hired, I feel like I remember you mentioning PR at some point. Have you hired PR agencies to actually go out and try to drum these things up for you? I feel like PR could be something that it could either be it could either be incredibly valuable on a return on investment, but I also feel like hear horror stories of people dropping 5, 10, 15K per month for absolutely nothing.
So we did, but it was not for, they offer that service, but it was not for link building. We hired them for social media, Instagram, just to run our Instagram account for us for maybe 6 months or a year. And they're great. They're experts in sports and beauty and so on, which cross a lot of the segments that we cross into. They're able to create partnerships with other brands, but it was all about Instagram and so on. It was not about the website. So we did work with a firm like that, and there is an opportunity to do that for sure, but we've not done that.
Kind of last question here a little bit, because we're starting to run out of time, but very right hard turn from SEO, link building, all this kind of stuff. But you sell in three different markets. You sell in the US and Canada and Australia. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe 60% in the US and maybe the rest of it split between Canada and Australia. Is that correct?
Not 60% Canada and 20-20, I would say, Australia, US.
20-20. Got it. Thanks. So any thoughts, like you have an interesting, having that kind of viewpoint in selling, I mean, not insanely, but that's a meaningful split between those three. Do you feel like, obviously the US market is bigger, more competitive, I would guess. Canada and Australia is smaller, but easier to maybe get some footholds. Is that a fair, like, do you still feel like that's a fair representation of things? Or and also, anything like, what are some big differences people from the US should know expanding into Canada and Australia or vice versa?
Oh, interesting. Well, you know, so my perspective is of a Canadian expanding to the US and Australia. And the US was always meant to be my core market, but it just didn't turn out that way. And today, all of the sales, which is significant, like all of the sales we make in the US are earned completely. We don't pay for any media at this point, like at all in the US. Same thing for Australia, UK. The only place where we pay for media is Canada today. But, you know, in terms of the difficulties we find are with product distribution, the rules of crossing the border with our products because they're expensive. And so if you're shipping something from Canada into the US, the product's retail value or sale declared value needs to be below $800. You know, so for us, it's if you want to avoid paying a 20% duty on our specific products, which matters, you know, because if we have to pay that on top of having a really high cost of acquisition, it's difficult. You know, so we have to limit the products we sell into the US or the bundles we offer so that we don't purposely position all these products where there is tax issues at the forefront, you know, and we purposely move the smaller products, our pro, essential, the tabletop, things that are below $800, just because there's no tax and duty implications and complexity there. And just also just from a business standpoint, it wouldn't make sense.
You mentioned you only do paid acquisition in Canada. Is that just because the cost, it just pencils out? You can still run paid ads and make it work on a economic and a financial basis because it's less competitive or cheaper than in Australia and America?
Yeah. In Canada, our ROAS on sort of last click attribution, PPC only, is about 3.5 now. It's getting better, maybe closer to 4 even. In the US, it's like 0.4. It's like 0.4. every $1,000 I invest, I lose 600. And it seems like there's no end in sight because we've invested, you know, a lot. And and it's not like I don't understand that space. I've, you know, built a pretty big company in the world of PPC advertising. And I understand it fairly well, you know, and I have really good friends who can help me with different, you know, strategies and tactics and helping me manage the accounts, but we've just not been able to break through. The cost per click is just too high in the US. I'm confident that is the biggest problem we're facing, is how do we enter that market? You know, because we've entered other markets too, in Europe and so on, but there's language issues, currency, not so much with Shopify markets today. A lot of these currency and duty are sort of gone away-ish, but the language remains a problem. You know, you can translate your website to all the languages in the world, but then you need to support, and we need to support customers. We need to talk to them. You know, we can't just hope to have automated answers to everything. It's not possible.
So rouge.care or rougecare.ca, and Mark, apologies for butchering that at the top. I was trying to get your name right. Okay. And you very, very diplomatically, but more or less said, yeah, as without the French background, you're probably going to hash this, and I proved you right. But make sure to check out their website, both for the content, you know, content class, and also to check out their red light therapy products, which are very cool. And would love to end this with a quick lightning round, if you're game, Mark. So I'll ask you a handful of questions, and feel free to just give me, you know, fast, you know, 2-3 word answers or one sentence at the most. But if you're up for diving in, let's finish it off that way.
Okay.
Great. How would you describe the e-commerce environment in a few words right now?
Probably easier than ever, more accessible than ever. And it's not just e-commerce anymore. It seems like a business or commerce in general is e-commerce.
What's one of the fondest memories from your childhood?
Probably fishing with my father. These are things that I hold on to. I still love fishing. I take my kids with me.
And if you weren't living, I believe you're in Montreal right now. If you weren't living in Montreal, where would you live?
Maybe Indonesia. Maybe San Francisco Bay Area. For completely different reasons. Just the business climate for my niche, you know, the things that I'm good at and that I love in San Francisco are match made in heaven, including financing. Although, and then Indonesia is a great vacation spot. It's beautiful there, Bali especially, and I've been there, and I miss it.
What's the hardest part of your business?
Is that I don't have enough time to dedicate to it. I have another company that takes up almost all of my time. You know, I wish I could clone myself to really, really focus on the e-commerce business a lot more.
Oh, what's the other company you're running? I had no idea.
It's a programmatic advertising business. If you think of PPC, Google Ads, and so on, and Facebook ads, there's another world where you can buy media sort of in a very similar way, which is the programmatic world. And it's just buying ads either on just websites at large, on television, connected TV, radio ads, podcast ads, and so on. It's a giant industry, and we're probably one of the leading service companies in that space.
What's the name of the business?
It's called Clever Programmatic.
Clever Programmatic. Yeah. Got it. Very cool. We'll have to link up to it so people can check it out. How much money is enough in the bank? So this is, you know, it could be cash, investments, kind of a liquid net worth in the bank that if you never made any more in the future, you'd be good. You'd say, you know, if I made more, it'd be nice, but if I don't, I'm good. What's that amount? This is the doozy that people have to think about.
8 to 12 million. Let's say 12 million. I would probably stop working or stop stressing about anything if I had. Yeah, I think that's the right number. $12 million in the bank. Just interest on that alone will cover more than my lifestyle and traveling and so on. And capital can stay there for the kids later. Yeah, that's the number, 12.
Nice. How many hours a week do you work?
Too many. Probably, and you know, I'm 53, so too many is all relative. I've worked more. I'd probably say 60 hours, 55, 60 hours a week.
What's your number one hobby and you can't say work?
Oh, it's fishing.
Fishing. And then finally, who's one of the most, it doesn't have to be the definitive, but who's one of the more interesting people you've met through being a part of e-commerce Fuel?
I only met one person because I'm new to the community, but I've interacted with others. Kayvon, he's a Canadian entrepreneur with the Bells of Steel.
Yeah.
He's been very, very helpful, very welcoming. And I had a bunch of questions related to exporting my goods into the US, you know, which he does every day. So he gave me good insights and a great guy.
Very cool. Well, awesome. Thanks, Kayvon. Yeah, as a gentleman and a fun guy to hang out with for sure. Love having him in the community. Well, Mark, thank you so much. It's been fun to kind of hear how you're doing SEO and how successful it's been for you, especially, you know, kind of a modern take on it. So rouge.care or rougecare.ca. And again, you can check those all out. The Red Light Therapy products as well, as just seeing how he's putting together content over there. So really enjoyed it and appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Andrew. Have a good day.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help. Access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to One-Click Upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.